This is Pure Decking Show number 239 for Thursday. I forgot what year it was.
1488.
October something. October the 6th? What is today? 8th.
6th.
No, 6th, I was right. Thursday, October the 6th, 1488. I am Morps. This is the show about stuff that interests me, like our current police state, information security, and apparently looting in Florida after the hurricane, according to all these Twitter feeds. So, tonight I am drinking Jim Beam Double Oaked, and I'll be honest, I think I like Devil's Cup better. Madman, what are you drinking?
I'm drinking Woodchucks.
You like have to stuff them in a blender first, or is it like a press?
It depends how long you want to hear them scream.
Mm.
Now, see, with the pressed, you get the tactile sensation of feeling their bones crunch, and they more squeak than scream. If you toss them in the blender, the first one squeals quite a bit before he goes all bloody, and the rest of them get panicky. It's kind of hard to get them in after that. So it depends on how much of a workout you want to get. I went with the workout, so a few at a time through a blender.
Cool. Static, what are you drinking?
I'm drinking Captain Morgan's Black Spice Rum, mixed with a multitude of pills.
Did you take the pharmaceutical grab bag? Because I understand they mixed Flintstones chewables in those.
Possibly.
Don't know what we took. We'll know in an hour or so when he starts hallucinating or has an erection that won't go away.
I just clicked the little blue tab and opened the little clear chute that said Thursday PM, poured it into my hand, stuffed it in my mouth, and drank.
Oh, we're going to have to talk with your wife and or your daughter, because we're going to have some fun with the pharmaceutical pranking. Speaking of somebody who knows a thing or two about pharmaceutically pranking someone, are you? What are you drinking?
I never did it. No, I never did it, and no one took photos of it. I'm not even here.
Excellent. Laser, what are you drinking?
I am drinking a vintage box Merlot.
Vintage box Merlot.
It's been a while since I could drink it, so it's been sitting for a while. That's about as close to vintage as that sort of thing gets.
I'm not certain that soaking in a plastic bag counts as vintage.
It's high-grade cardboard box. It's kind of aging in a wood barrel-ish.
It's low-grade Merlot in the box. It's the high-grade Merlot in a box.
So what chemicals does it leach out of the cardboard to add to the flavoring? As opposed to, you know, oak.
I don't know. It kind of tastes like purple.
God. Not actually wine. Nobody tell him. It's just Kool-Aid. So, first up, I thought this would be fun to talk about. This article's from the BBC. Throw this link in the chat. Said paste, not print. And over here. So, future. This is BBC News. Future warnings and technology and shit. Hack warnings prompt cyber security fatigue. It feels like my day job. Relentless cybersecurity warnings have given people security fatigue that stops them from keeping themselves safe, suggests a study. Many ignored warnings they received, found the U.S. National Institute of Standards and Technology. Others were warned... Were warned about software updates and by the number of passwords they had to remember. Oh, they're worn out. Okay, here we go. I can read. Others were worn out by software updates and the number of passwords they had to remember. This risky behavior might make people more susceptible to attack, it warns. We weren't even looking for fatigue in our interviews, but we got this overwhelming feeling of weariness throughout all the data, said computer scientist Mary Thelenophis, one of the experts who coordinated the study. Responses from subjects revealed that many felt overwhelmed by having to be alert for digital threats at all times, remembering to act safely online, and by different security and privacy policies on the sites they used. Others were worn down by the number of passwords, PINs, and other secure credentials they had to remember. Years ago, you had one password and kept up with it at work, said Ms. Thelenoffice. Now people are being asked to remember 25 or 30. They were frustrated by the extra security steps they had to go through to get at their stuff in online bank accounts and other websites. We haven't really thought about cybersecurity expanding what it's done to people, she added. So they got some statistics here. On average, Britons have 22 separate passwords. In addition, they typically access at least 4 separate websites with the same password. 1 million new malware variants are being created each day. 1 in 113 emails contains malware. And details of login names and passwords for more than 1.5 billion accounts have been stolen and shared online. I think they're undercounting. The NIST study involved in-depth interviews with broad cross-section of Americans aged 20 to 60 who lived in rural and urban areas and were in high and low-paying jobs. Responses from interviewees revealed that many were fatalistic about what they could do about being attacked, and many were resigned to be caught out at some point. They questioned why they would be targeted by malicious hackers, given that they did not work for a sensitive government department or a finance company. Few said they could name a friend or relative, or few said they could name a relative who'd been hit by a hack attack. Others asked how they could possibly be expected to stay safe when massive corporations that spend huge sums on security were regularly called out. And NIST is following a follow-up. So, I don't know. You guys get worn out by me screaming about security shit all the time?
You're worn out by my own security fucking every day.
The passwords you have to keep track of for work, and these kind of days is insane, especially if you're in IT. You kind of have to use a password manager program just to keep track of them all.
That's true. Yeah, I mean, I use one too. Madman, what were you going to say?
I would say if you do a couple, at least what I don't consider too bad things, it's not too terrible. I have a password for like bank accounts and secure things, and that doesn't get used for anything other than my bank account. And then I have kind of a jumble password that gets tacked onto a couple like email clients. And then my WoW password, and that's all the personal stuff I've got. And then at work, that's the one that's really annoying because of the reset policy at work. And
every
I have
90
to come
days?
Up with a new password for 6 different programs every time it renews.
And actually, given where you work, they have rules about using a mobile phone, so the common password apps, which actually are useful in this case, probably don't help you that much.
Yeah, that doesn't help me at all because they're concerned about anyone pulling out a mobile phone and the data leak and breach that can cause. And I can understand them not wanting us to have those devices out if we're going to use it to record client information.
What about a USB stick?
Lockdown.
If I stick a USB anything into my computer, that is grounds for termination.
What do you do, Static?
Me? So, typically, what I've been doing lately is I'll run a password for the given time personal sites. We'll talk about that first. Personal site. And then I'll add on, like, a little identifier for whatever site it is. For, you know, Facebook, it might be my password, and then FB, and then my password, you know, GM for Gmail, you know, something like that. So each one's a little bit different and things that I can remember very easily. But I'll run the same quote-unquote base password, but I regularly change it probably at least twice, sometimes 3 times a year. At work, though, our policy is every 30 days.
Yep.
Mm. And I have access to probably 30 to 40 different systems that I have to change every 30 days.
And so I'm willing to bet. See, I actually get to write the password policy at work, so I set it to be a little bit longer because it's honestly ridiculous to make people change their password every 30 days. These password length and age requirements, they started in, I want to say, in the 80s from an old NIST document where they, you know, were calculating how long it would take to crack 8-character passwords in, you know, decades. So that advice hasn't aged very well, and you end up with these weird corporate password policies where it's like, you know, you have to change them every 30 days, and they have to have, you know, an uppercase character, a lowercase character, a haiku, the name of, you know, three different saints. I mean, it starts getting silly, all these password requirements. So I actually backed them off where I work. And our password length is longer. I don't want to say exactly how long, but it is longer.
We've done that too.
And whereas I've made the requirements that the passwords be a little bit longer, I've backed off on the complexity. So it's on one hand, it's got some people upset because their passwords have to be longer, but they're not tripping the weird rules of having to have caps and all this other crap in their password. And because they don't have to change them as often, we're doing fewer password resets. People aren't losing them as often. And now the trick here is, though, I try to keep up with the logs, and if I see weird behavior with an account, I go log it immediately. Now, of course, we have the retry policies too, but the moment I think something wonky is going on, like I see a login from a weird place or something, I try to take action on it. Now, that doesn't always happen as well as I would like. Obviously, it's a pain in the ass to keep up with it, but I honestly think behavior monitoring and some sort of identifying token versus passwords and hoping for the best is going to be the way forward. But I don't know. I mean, you know, Zach, you said you got to change 40 some odd systems every 30 days. I'm betting you automate it, and you've probably gotten to the point where you use the same password and just a number on the end. -1, -2, -3.
Yep.
So once somebody...
Or adding on a special character, like repeating the special character, and mm-hmm. that gets out, you know, 3 or 4. Because I have several systems, you cannot use the same password for 8 or 10 revisions before it. And it's like, how can you remember that many? Really? You can't.
Without numbers, it's almost impossible.
And we're exactly like you. You know, we've increased the complexity is still there, but we've increased the number of you know, digits or alphanumeric or whatever characters that are required. You know, I'll say how many. We're out to 12 now.
Well, 12 is what I tried to set it to. You would not believe the bitching. I tried to take it from 8 to 12, and you would not believe how upset people got.
Well, most of our folks now, at least within my tower of the company, you know, we have a little bit more control of the hardware side of things. So I've helped them actually use things such as LastPass or crap, there's another one out there. I can't think of it right now. Anyways.
One Password.
Yeah, it's not that one. There's
Password Manager Pro.
There you go, Password Manager Pro. We also use that one. So you know, we have people that are using that that are not really technical minded, because I have several in my field. I deal with EMR stuff, so I have several nurses or clinicians have no clue about technology. They are the dumbest of dumbest people when it comes to a freaking computer. And
I'm not sure.
I try to make it as easy as we can for them.
I'm not sure, Static. I might have you beat. When you also throw in multilingual into the mix, it becomes even more of an interesting challenge when the language for the system is in English and they only speak a different language, like Spanish.
Yep, I got that too.
And trying to communicate the password requirements to somebody that's brand new to the system is a really enjoyable experience.
The length would be good if I could keep my passwords longer. I could do passphrases and remember them.
Sure.
I was going to let Aryu go, but what were you going to ask me, Static?
I was just going to say, what do your people do? Do they use, you know, are you seeing an increase in, like, password management software being used?
I've been trying to get people to try LastPass because I've been playing with it and I like it. And I've dug into their security's not perfect, but their company at least has the right attitude about it. You know, they disclose fairly quickly when they're breached. They deal with it correctly, and it looks like they're hashing and salting correctly.
That's good.
As far as what my users do, it's interesting because I deal with both our tech people and our users. Most of our users are fairly good about setting a password and using it, and usually it not being terrible. Actually, it turns out the IT people are usually way worse. You know, I had one today comment on my password because I had a crowd at my desk, and it was something going on, and I was having to type over and over and over again. And one of them went, "Holy shit, how long's your password?" I don't know why. He's like, "'Cause you type a lot." Of course, I type fast, so it's not a big deal. But yeah, it was funny because I said, "He said that's a stupid long password." I said, "No, it's a secure password." And I said, "Oh, so it's not? So your password isn't password, and then a colon and a string of numbers?" I said, "What do you think I am, a developer?" So, dude, they are the worst.
They just want to get in and out and done. They don't care
about
security.
Well, the thing is, they want to set dumbass passwords, but they've got some system-level access to shit. So they'll go and set up, like, other accounts and shit. And that's always fun tracking down. And, of course, I always ask our management, why do they need that access? Can I please? Oh, no, they've got to have that access. They're abusing it. Well, go explain to them why that's bad.
The way you explain to them why that's bad is you revoke the access.
I'm kind of with Madman on this one.
Yeah, I agree.
It's easier to ask for forgiveness than permission. Come on.
I've done it a couple of times. Basically, I took their access away, and then they go complain to their manager. Their manager complains to my manager. Oh, it's a bitch. And there are issues in my office of siloing
They need to look into least access practices a bit more, it may sound like.
Well, there are a lot of things going on there, but I don't want to get into it too much because I don't want to identify where I work. anyways.
Rocket Steel.
Yeah, that's one issue.
That's a good way of putting it.
It's kind of good on the security end of it. It's kind of annoying when I'm trying to help someone with an answer I have the knowledge on how to explain to them. I just don't have access to that portion of their history, as it were. Like, I can't look into these accounts because I'm not allowed to. If I could, I could help you. And I understand completely why my place of employment does it. The less information I have access to, the less information I can steal and sell to people.
Well, it's not just that, but I mean... You know, think if somebody gets your password and they know that it's not you because you're in a meeting with your manager and somebody starts logging in as you in 30 different systems, right? So, it's a total hypothetical here, but, you know, let's say shit like that happens because I've seen shit like that happen. You know it's not that person, but you know that their password just got popped. And, you know, then you got to realize, you have to go through and deal with how much data did we just lose, you know, how much data did we just potentially lose control over? And the smaller that window is, the better. So, least access principle is absolutely the correct way to go. But you have to get your management to define what least access is for a particular job role.
Yeah, if they decide your job doesn't need access to that, good news. You get to pass off every one of those issues to somebody else. And employees just need to look at it that way.
Well,
oh, I'm not allowed to look at this? Wonderful. Let me get you to Bob. Issues. Bob will help you.
Somebody. Oh, it's Laser. Dude.
I'm sorry. I can't help it.
Look at the hiccups.
Mike, so, anyways.
From the other point of view. Are you, when you're looking to get into things that you may or may not need to be in? What type of password policy do you look for?
The weakest one possible.
Just because you want to freak out giraffes. Everyone should freak out
giraffes. Nothing wrong with freaking out giraffes in the middle of the night with a camera. No?
Yes. Yes. Well, okay. From an attacker's point of view, 9 times out of 10, I'm not guessing your password. I found it somewhere. You know,
pretty much.
You happen to have your home folders shared out on the web and indexed by Google, and passwords.xls is such a secure file name.
Oh, God. So, not saying where I work, but
fuck it.
The
person
gonna go
in
charge
right
of
now.
Corporate training suggested that once.
So, let's just
stick it in an X, oh. in a spreadsheet.
Files.
Stick it in an Excel spreadsheet. Your passwords.
It's suggested by Google. Passwords, file types, XLS, 2016 cycle passwords. My passwords on Advanta, Axcrypt. Oh, fuck. Wow. Oh, let's open this. Yeah, I'm just Google dorking for passwords in the middle of the show. Don't mind me.
Just type in, isn't it index of passwords?
You can do that one.
Index of spreadsheet passwords. Index of... Fuck, there's a heap of them.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty easy. People would be surprised how easy it is to do.
Oh, here's one on somebody's GitHub. Ooh, that's a good filter. Site.
Yeah.
GitHub.
Well, what is it about locks? Are you the only keep honest people honest?
Pretty much the only keep the honest people out.
And, yeah. Kind of the same way with online security.
Yeah. Yeah, you'd be surprised what people just leave lying around, especially on, you know, publicly accessible desktop areas.
That's all test data. Okay.
It's all well, so much fun.
Mm-hmm.
See. Handle changing sorry password. Actually, I'm not finding as many as I used to. You used to, like, on the first page, you'd find something doing this kind of shit.
Just takes a little bit more time now.
Oh, what's this? E-commerce document. Password Aruba. Ooh, Aruba passwords. Let's take a look at this. Anybody who doesn't know, Aruba is a wireless access.
Is password a password that's listed?
No. No, these look real. There's the URL for an Italian shop. There's the logins, and there's their generated passwords. Fucking good. Oh, Italian spreadsheet on GitHub. When was that last updated? 2011, so these may not be all that good. But,
Morphs, yeah, you know better than that. Just because they haven't changed it in forever doesn't mean it's not valid.
Unfortunately, you're not wrong. But my point is, yeah, 9 times out of 10, people, they're not cracking your passwords. They're finding them in something. Or guessing them. Or doing the reset questions thing. So... It's not so much about does your password contain the blood of the firstborn, you know, a Christmas carol, and, you know, a key code you can only get by holding down Alt and mashing the number pad. It's have you been irresponsible with them? Did they get leaked? And, you know, if they've been leaked, change them. So.
Then the... Do you know your passwords have been leaked?
Anytime you see a service... Okay, first and foremost, if you have a Minecraft account, assume your password was leaked because those servers got hacked multiple times. Just assume it. Yahoo, huge breach. Go change your password. Do you use the same or a similar password to what's in Yahoo from recent breach? Yeah, go change your password. Go change it anywhere you use the same password or you use the Let Yahoo login. And it sucks because it means you basically have to keep up with all these notices. So I understand what they're talking about when they say fatigue. It's my damn day job, and it's about all I get to do. So, but yeah, I haven't gone Google looking for passwords in a while, but it's always fun. Pastebin passwords. I mean, it's not that hard to find them.
Yeah.
So. man, that's just the easy shit. Start getting into advanced crap where you're digging through web servers and finding things like VimRC files and other Slack space crap, and you can get passwords out of config files for websites where the web servers might maybe misconfigured, or there's a .back copy of a file floating around. I mean, it's just people do it. It's too damned easy. Anyways, let's move on here to first story for tonight is from Ars Technica. Verizon workers can now be fired if they repair copper lines.
What?
Yep. I'll get you the links.
Why?
Verizon has told its field technicians in Pennsylvania that they can be fired if they try to fix broken copper phone lines. Instead, employees must try to replace copper lines with a device that connects to Verizon's wireless cell phone network. This directive came in from a memo from Verizon to workers on September the 20th. Failure to follow this directive may result in disciplinary action up to and including dismissal, which is boilerplate for policy documents. So I doubt they're going to fire somebody the first time they do it. It isn't clear whether this policy has been applied to Verizon workers outside of Pennsylvania. The memo and other documents were made public by the Communication Workers of America Union, which asked Pennsylvania Public Utility Commission to put a stop to the forced copper to wireless conversions. The wireless home phone service VoiceLink is not a proper replacement for copper phone lines because it does not work with security alarms, fax machines, medical devices such as pacemakers that require telephone monitoring, and other devices, the union said. Field technicians are required to have VoiceLink units on their truck and to refuse to repair copper plant servicing voice-only customers. The CWA local president, James Gardler, wrote in testimony presented to the State Utility Commission, "Our members are being told if they actually try to repair a copper plant instead of using VoiceLink, they will be subject to disciplinary action by Verizon." The memo to field technicians said that in order to give customers the best possible wireless network or best possible network performance in non-Fios areas, Verizon will migrate as many customers experiencing trouble on their line to VoiceLink as possible. When technicians visit homes of voice-only customers with copper phone line problems, they must first determine whether the customer can be connected to a VoiceLink wireless service. If VoiceLink is available and there is trouble in the Verizon copper network, the technician must install the wireless service. If the customer does qualify, follow VoiceLink installation migration procedure and complete the migration, the memo says. Technicians can fix the copper line if the customer does not qualify for wireless service. In those cases, the tech must document the reason the customer didn't qualify for VoiceLink. It is a requirement that migration to VoiceLink must be your first option when the customer qualifies and the trouble is in Verizon's network, the memo says. Another memo tells workers they should only restore copper phone service if they can verify that the wireless VoiceLink will not work. VoiceLink devices connect a home inside wireless to Verizon's cellular network. So the union actually wants to fix the phone lines, and Verizon wants everybody on the cell networks.
They do know that if the copper line is broken, it's always going to be an issue with their network because it can't talk to their network.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, if they're putting their VoiceLink in and it's only the phone lines going to the house that are busted, I don't know, though, because, I mean, it's one of those things where it's like, on one hand, I get it. You don't want to maintain the old infrastructure. On the other hand, though, cell signal sucks when you get away from cities and roads.
And I'm paying you for that old infrastructure. You fix it.
They're still charging those fees on the phone bills, aren't they?
Yes, they are.
Yep.
So if I'm paying it, you fix it. Now, if you're not charging enough, that's your own damn fault. Revise your billing structure, but fix my shit.
So Verizon actually sent out an answer to this article. Our first responsibility to a customer out of service is to restore service as quickly as possible, Verizon spokesperson said. Verizon, the unions, and regulators all agree that service restoration is paramount. We have a device, VoiceLink, that can restore service immediately for a specific set of customers, and it's hard to argue with disciplining someone who intentionally leaves a customer without service. So what they're saying is we're putting them on VoiceLink because it's faster than fixing the wire.
How long does it take to fix a copper wire?
It can take quite a long time.
Considering they've probably sacked half their workforce over the last 20 years, fucking a long time.
Well, the problem is with actually trying to trace down copper issues is that you...
Find
unless you've got
the
right
is.
Technology, it can take a lot of time to actually figure out what's going on. Better for worse.
Yeah.
So I can kind of see that it's a time saver, but...
So here's my favorite part of this of Verizon's answer to this article. Verizon said it does not need FCC approval for moving copper customers to wireless because the FCC rules apply to the retirement of copper, not to the restoration of individual customer services. The FCC is aware of VoiceLink. So in other words, Verizon is taking the argument, well, we're not retiring the copper, we're just refusing to fix it.
Doesn't that mean they're retiring it?
I mean, no. We're migrating individual customers.
So they're just playing word games. Hypothetical, if the entire cell network falls over due to a massive power surge or something like that, what's the backup?
None. You're fucked.
Yeah. That's pretty much what happened here last week with an entire state of, I think it was 270,000 people went without power for 2 days. Is they'd removed all the old coal power stations, things like that, and gone with the solar and the wind turbines, and well, they all blew over in a storm, and therefore everybody was without power for a couple of days. Yeah, don't worry about redundancies, not needed.
Lovely. Next article is from Engadget. Comcast's data restrictions are going from testing to reality for most of its customers. Its Xfinity terabyte internet data usage plan is already in place in a number of places and will roll out to 18 new markets, including California, Michigan, Florida, and others listed in its FAQ beginning November the 1st. For its part, the ISP claims 99% of customers use less than 1 terabyte of data per month. Okay, today, what about, and the median is just 75 megs? What?
Don't worry about it, Morse. Put your head in the sand. Nobody will ever hit that. You know?
Morse, a lot of customers, they're looking at their cell network. How many grandparents do you know that watch Netflix on their cell phone?
No. This is Comcast's Xfinity. Oh. This is the cable company.
Maybe they're just also measuring cable customers, not just internet customers?
Median use is 75 megs?
That cannot be true for someone that's actually using the internet.
I have to break it to you guys. It's in Kentucky and Tennessee and Arkansas and Florida and Georgia, Illinois and Indiana. So
you can't load a single web page and use just 75 meg. I mean, seriously, that's like 2 high-resolution graphics on a page. It's nothing. What are they doing, browsing in links from the console?
I could never see a day when people would need more than 10 gigabytes as a hard drive.
Of course,
that's
with digital...
That logic, man.
Yeah, of course, with digitally delivered games, software, streaming video that is increasingly common in HD and 4K resolutions, that could change rapidly. And then we've got some screenshots here of what can you do with a terabyte? So they put out some stupid YouTube video trying to claim that a terabyte is enough for anybody.
That's a weird looking
rabbit. And here's the screenshot. And I remember getting these before, back when I had Comcast a couple years ago. Dear Xfinity customer, you've reached 80% of your 1024 gigabyte monthly data plan. As of 4/28/16, you have 205 gig remaining for this calendar month. Yeah, I would regularly burn through and get the warning phone call saying that I've used too much data. Just watching fucking Netflix. Or, PrimeWire. But, I mean, yeah, no. I mean, there's no fucking way the median is 25 megs or 75 megs. So what happens if you go over a terabyte a month? For the first 2 months and a 12-month period that it happens, nothing. Also, Comcast customers can adjust their settings for notification via email, browser, or text when they reach for their solds like 50, 75, 80, or 125% of the cap. Wait, 125% is too late. You're going to get billed.
That doesn't make sense.
The third time it's exceeded within a 12-month period, however, the courtesy months go away and the user will be charged $10 for an additional 50 gigs of data. Wow. You got to love these arbitrary prices, which will continue happening to a limit of $200 per month. If you want unlimited data access, you can buy it up front for an additional $50 per month over your current internet bill. So let's be really honest here. This isn't Comcast rolling out a data cap. This is Comcast downgrading your plan, keeping the same price, and now offering what you used to have at a $50 premium.
And I'm completely fine with that. My problem is they're not allowing Google Fiber everywhere.
Local monopolies are for the win or lose in this case.
Because if Google Fiber was everywhere, Comcast wouldn't be doing that. If they allowed municipalities everywhere to run their own fiber lines, I doubt Comcast would be doing that.
Yeah, because there's the only reason you can get away with this shit is there is no competition.
The local government denies competition.
Yep. But it is their network. They're completely allowed to do it.
Next article is from Sophos. Sophos' naked security blog. Actually, I like the Sophos blog. Beds secretly subpoenaed the encrypted chat at Signal. Newly revealed documents show that the Open Whisper Systems, maker of encrypted chat app Signal, was secretly subpoenaed by feds earlier this year. Besides its own chat app, Open Whisper Systems is the force behind the Signal protocol, which powers the encryption built into WhatsApp, Facebook Messenger, and Google's Allo. OWS, in conjunction with the American Civil Liberties Union, began fighting the shakedown in a federal grand jury proceeding in the Eastern District of Virginia at some date in the first half of the year. All the dates in the documents apparently have been blacked out. The ACLU and OWS published the subpoena documents on Tuesday. The feds were after a wealth of information. The ACLU called the demand wildly overbroad, but given that OWS doesn't store much of anything, they basically came away empty-handed. As the subpoena shows, the government was after any and all of targeted individuals. Subscriber account information, any associated accounts to include subscriber name, address, telephone numbers, email addresses, method of payment, IP registration, IP history, logs and addresses, account history, toll numbers, upstream and downstream providers, any associated accounts acquired through cookie data, and any other contact information from interception to the present. Or from inception to the present. So, yeah, we want everything. But OWS simply doesn't keep this kind of information on its customers. The only information that was able to give to the feds were the dates and times for which an account was created and when it last connected to Signal servers. Yay for not keeping logs. I'll bet it's a bitch to troubleshoot when they have problems, though. The subpoena came with a gag order compelling OWS to complete silence as the data sought and whether or not the company complied. The gag order was supposed to last an entire year. As the ACLU notes, there can be just cause for gag orders, but the magistrate judge who signed the order cited reason to believe that notification of the existence of the subpoena will seriously jeopardize the investigation under prosecution by grand jury, including by giving targets an opportunity to flee or continue flight from prosecution, destroy or tamper with evidence, change patterns of behavior, or notify Confederates. The ACLU said gag orders can be necessary, but the U.S. government is giving them an out by default, which runs counter to the stringent First Amendment standard that dictates their use. From a post-ACLU staff member, Brett Max Kaufman, any gag order must be justified by something much greater. The First Amendment requires that close to courtrooms or seal evidence, and especially to prohibit any party from speaking publicly on a matter of public concern, the government must demonstrate a compelling interest in secrecy, which it must apply that secrecy in the narrowest way possible. But instead, the government appears to be seeking blanket gag orders by default without considering precisely what information can be disclosed without harm to its interests. So, yeah, they're just going to subpoena. This is what we talked about a couple of years ago, that the feds aren't going to bother hacking into everything. They're just going to subpoena the shit out of it.
Security. Terrorism.
It depends on the phrasing of the subpoena as to whether or not I agree with it. If it's AT&T, give us everything you have, then that's a bullshit subpoena. If it's AT&T, give us everything you have on Madman, that's completely fine.
Well, apparently it was a whole list of people.
If they're listing people and not going for a blanket, we want your database. Because people, they can have reason to think Madman Morps and RU are, I don't know, terrorists planning to do something. But give us all of your customer information on all of your customers. I doubt that's legit, because you can't know that everyone is fucking going to do something. But if they're listing John Doe, Will Smith, whatever, in their subpoenas, that's fine. That's a legit subpoena. I'm not sure it should be done in secret, because you are supposed to be able to defend yourself from the government whenever they're accusing you of wrongdoing. I mean, am I wrong on any of that?
I don't disagree.
I think technically you're correct, but realistically, I don't think we can expect anything.
Well, how long do they need to build a case, and how much warning should you have so you can defend yourself? Because when they're knocking on the door with handcuffs, saying, we're hauling you off to prison now, that's a bit late. But I can see, if they think I'm murdering somebody, telling me that they're going to dig up my backyard 3 weeks before they dig up my backyard looking for bodies, I can see that as kind of bad.
There's probably going to be a court of law for murder, things like that, but when it comes to computer-related crime, with all the dark bills that get passed these days, you'll just disappear and nobody will know shit.
Oh, sorry, officer, I just decided to put a pool in. I mean,
It's not even bills being passed. A lot of this is FCC regulation, at least in this country.
I know the bit of computer crime that's happened here, it's just been, and Bob's been arrested. What's Bob been charged with? We can't tell you that. When will Bob's trial be? Oh, we can't tell you that.
All right. If who's Bob's gonna be been arrested, Bob? You can tell what Bob was charged with, because they've got their case if they're arresting somebody. There's no legit reason for that.
Versus,
well, I know it's a different country, but any country, if you're arresting somebody, you have enough evidence to bring a case against them. If you don't, you should not be arresting them.
Oh,
well,
shit.
Then again, you're talking about that. What about Thailand at the moment, where, hey, if you suspect someone of taking drugs, or just even suspect them of dealing drugs, shoot them, drop them off at the police station, and claim your bounty?
They're wrong.
Dude, it's on the tip of my tongue, and I can't seem to... Madman, you watched Deep Space Nine. Bad guy aliens in Deep Space Nine.
Cardassians?
Thank you! Go see how they handled their court system in that show.
Oh, it's the same way as the French court system. You are guilty until proven innocent.
Yeah, but you're not allowed to be proven innocent. It's like they don't even bother arresting you until the trial's over.
It's not that until the trial's over. The trial isn't to determine guilt or innocence. The trial is to show everyone in the Cardassian Empire that the state is fair and correct.
That's how it is, yeah.
That's just the first thing that came to mind. Sorry.
Until proven innocent is a very American thing and doesn't really exist outside of the West.
You mean innocent until proven guilty?
Oh, yeah, innocent until proven guilty. Did I reverse that?
Matter if you reverse it, yes.
No, I was asking, did I reverse that? Because
yes, you did.
Most legal systems depends on your skin are color, guilty but, until proven innocent. And the reason they say that is the cops have already done an investigation. So they're now assuming you're guilty. Why else would they take you to trial?
That does seem to depend on your skin color these days, but anyways. Moving on.
Not certain if I want to let that stand, but I think I will just for the sake of brevity.
Yeah, I'm not going anywhere fucking near it. I've got a 21-foot pole, and I am just shoving off.
Static, are you wanting to say something about that before we move on? You made a noise.
Because that's just going to run another half hour if we get into this.
Only thing I'm saying is that check yourself before you wreck yourself.
I would go with white people are more likely to be shot by cops because I love hate facts.
Fuck off, Madman. We're not talking about this. La 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 la.
I don't want to discuss it. But
I'm more than happy to help you. This show is not politics.
We're not going to discuss it, but I will say this one thing. It is only seems that way, Laser, because of media and the way they report stuff.
And I want to point out that's discussing this. Not wanting to discuss it would be moving on.
Moving on. Yep. Next article is from gwillem.github.io. Senate Republicans were skimmed for 6 months, and they just quietly fixed the store without really announcing it. For anybody who doesn't know, Senate Republicans is a store that sells election paraphernalia for the right, like Trump Pence stickers, Never Hillary shirts, stuff like that.
Peep memes?
Say what?
Peep memes? Pepe memes?
Yeah, sure.
Oh, why not? God, Pepe needs to be on Trump's website.
So, the article here, did you order anything from the Senate Republicans in the last half year? In that case, your name and credit card details have been skimmed and sent to a Russian server and subsequently sold on the darknet for $30. Republicans have rushed to their store to secure their store today as of October the 6th. No word about the skimming between March 16th and October the 5th. In a short video, this guy demonstrates how the skimming works. Basically, he's got evidence from the store that there was skimming malware installed on their website. And it's Russian credit card harvesters that run on top of jQuery. And, yeah, so he fed it fake data and then tracked it back. And, yeah, it's going to a Russian language website registered in Belize. Looks like the New Horizon building, Belize City, Belize. So, that's a problem.
Oh, yeah. It's not only a tax haven, they set up Russian servers. They're expanding their economy.
But, yeah, it's a form of card skimming. It's just malware on websites, and this one's kind of funny because if it's, you know, election-related. So.
And see, that's why you go straight to Alex Jones when you want to buy your right-wing paraphernalia. He may have secured his website.
So, next article up, paste, and throw it in the other chat room. One chat room for people listening on the IRC, for anybody who doesn't get on the IRC during the live shows. You're kind of missing out. If nothing else, you can make fun of me during the show and try to distract me while I'm reading these stories. Of course, the hosts do that anyways. this article is from PC World. The FCC is voting on strict privacy rules for ISPs in late October. The U.S. Federal Communications Commission will push forward with controversial privacy regulations that would require broadband providers to get customer permission before using and sharing geolocation, browsing histories, and other personal information. Broadband providers have complained that the proposal puts stronger privacy rules in place, but for them, that internet companies like Google and Facebook. FCC Chairman Tom Wheeler has scheduled the final vote for the regulations on October the 27th. Broadband customers should have the ability to make informed decisions about their privacy, and the rules are designed to help them, FCC officials said in a press briefing. Seldom do we stop to realize that our ISP is collecting information about us every time we go online, Wheeler wrote in a blog post. The problem is there are currently no rules in place on how ISPs may use and share their customers' personal information. The rules due for a vote later this year are a modified version of an ISP privacy proposal Wheeler first floated out for public comment in March. The final rules would require ISPs to obtain customer opt-in approval to use sensitive information and share it with partners. Sensitive information includes geolocation, web history, health and financial information, and app use history. The new rules would also require ISPs to notify customers about the type of information they are collecting, tell them how the information can be used and shared, and identify the partners it shares its customer information with. The rules would also require ISPs to take reasonable measures to protect the security of customer data. Those measures are based on the Federal Trade Commission and National Institution of Standards and Technology Cybersecurity Guidelines. Would also require ISPs to notify customers of data breaches when the ISPs believe there's a reasonable likelihood of customer harm. Require ISPs to report most data breaches to customers within 30 days and all breaches to the FCC within a week. And report breaches affecting more than 5,000 customers to the FBI and Secret Service. ISPs are obviously not happy with the proposal because it's the government stepping in and telling them how to do their business.
I think they should have already been informing their customers if there should have been could have been leaked. That's good customer service.
So,
Madman, yeah. I'm just going to go with, since when have you had good customer service from any ISP lately?
Agreed.
Okay, I'll give you that.
But I don't think any of us here have Google Fiber, so it's just like...
And I don't even know if they would be better. I just always want more companies. But, yeah. Telling your customers, oh yeah, your shit might be out there. Watch yourself. That's important. It shows integrity. I'm going to have to look up some more into that bill, because I've got to find something wrong with it. It's the government doing something.
I don't know, Madman. Yeah. I mean, on one hand, it's what they're telling the ISPs to do sounds good, but yeah, it's the government telling them how to do it. So, I don't know, what's the phrase? We're from the government and we're here to help. One of the scariest things you can ever hear. I mean, are you static? Any thoughts? All right, moving on. Next article is from The Guardian. You know, that bastion of truth. I have such a low opinion of media anymore. It's not funny. From The Guardian, the anonymous message board site 4chan has come to represent the darkest corners of internet subculture. You are not looking very hard at
God,
what you
no
think.
God, no, it doesn't.
Ripe with the misogyny and web taste and politically incorrect humor of the alt-right. You don't know what the alt-right is either.
No, I will give it to them. The alt-right is there, but other things are there too.
Now it appears to be in financial trouble, according to the site's new owner, Hiroku Nishimaru, who said on Sunday that the site can no longer afford infrastructure costs, network fees, server costs, and CDNs. The post begins, "Thank you for thinking about 4chan. We tried hard to keep 4chan as it is, but I failed. I am sincerely sorry." Nishimura outlined three options for the future of the site: halving traffic costs by limiting uploading sizes and closing some boards, adding many more ads, including pop-up ads, or adding more pay-for features and 4chan pass users. They're going to have a premium section. That would mean you have on your credit card bill 4chan premium. It's like, and how did you get on the list to go to the camps?
I wanted to look at B.
An unlikely savior for the site may have already emerged in the form of Martin Shkreli, the controversial former CEO of Curing Pharmaceuticals, who rose to fame after his company bought the patent to an HIV drug and raised the price from $13.50 a pill to $750 per pill, causing mass outrage. Shkreli announced on Twitter that he was open to joining the board of directors of 4chan. He then reached out to Nishimura directly, who responded, "I have replied to your DM. Thanks for supporting 4chan. 4chan was founded in 2003 by Chris Poole, an English-language version of popular Japanese image-sharing board 2chan. It's split into another subcategory, blah, 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 blah." Nishimura did not respond to comment by request by Guardian for comment. Site's influence in shaping identity and culture of the internet as we know it today is vast. The internet's... it's the internet's sweaty engine room. This guy has obviously been to 4chan like once. It has birthed global movements. The activist hacking group Anonymous originated on here. The group is named Anonymous for tag attached to 4chan posts. Oh, this hurts to read. More recently, its Anonymous boards, especially the far right leaning politics board poll, gave early sucker
They've
to Gamergate
never read and poll.
And so-called alt-right movement, which has emerged in the 2016 to ally themselves with Donald Trump's... It produced Pepe, the frog meme that was picked up by white supremacists and trolls and later condemned by the Southern Poverty Law Center as a hate symbol.
Oh, God, Pepe's a hate symbol? I thought he was a little retarded frog. We can't make the retard a hate symbol. Now are you telling retards are hateful? They're not. They're just retarded. This one happens to be a frog. I mean, he just wants a potato, guys. Give him some chicken tendies and leave him alone.
Pepe is the only meme 4chan has produced. Rick Rolling, the practice of tricking somebody into clicking a link to a video of Rick Ashley's Never Gonna Give You Up, leading to nearly 250 million views on YouTube and an unlikely revival of Ashley's career. LOL Cats, and innumerable number of other memes and slang and inside jokes originated there. It is the internet's id, a place where anonymity runs free in its purest form, the true nature of mankind can be glimpsed in all its horror and glory and depravity. If 4chan is the true nature of mankind, we are kind of fucked.
Oh, God. It does say in the Bible most of us are going to hell.
Predictably, the response to Nish Shore's message on the site was mixed. Posters on some boards, many of which have loyal, almost tribal user base, called for other boards to be closed. Yeah, that would be what would happen.
the best board. Close board that must board. Be closed, and everyone who's used it must be burned alive.
It's the Purge 4chan edition. One suggestion was to close B, the wildly popular random topic board, to which other users expressed immediate worry that B users would spread to other boards.
Yeah, if you shut B down, they'll go somewhere else. That has to stay. I never go to B. I don't want to use B. B is the one board in 4chan that must remain just so the B-tards stay there.
Oh, God.
What happens in B-tards? Stay with B-tards?
Yes.
Oh, it keeps getting better. How many porn boards do we need? Not this many, read another post. Some heatedly discussed the perils of pop-up advertising, where a few suggested merchandising as a way to solve the site's revenue problems. Others seemed worried. Please don't fuck this website up for us, one user plaintively posted. Another wrote, Hero, please don't ruin this for us. This is our only home.
We've been banned from everywhere else.
That's probably true. Go ahead, my man.
That's the reason you want to leave him there. He's one of those B-tards. You don't want him on the internet. You want him in 4chan, where he's not harming anything. And, ooh, think of all the poll memes you could put on a t-shirt. T-shirthell.com would go out of business. It couldn't keep up.
What do you think, are you?
My internet's just fucking up really hard right now, so yeah.
Wouldn't you buy a poll t-shirt? I don't know if you'd wear it anywhere, because you'd be lynched, but you should buy one.
Yeah, I'd buy one. If they shut 4chan down, God help every other message board website out there.
Oh, yeah. No,
that's
hold up.
The last thing. Like, at least we know where the termites are. The house is safe. You know what I mean?
As we soon have them as that shuts
in
down,
a little ant farm over here.
If they have like a closing date, I'm just gonna go on to 4chan. It'll be one of the few posts I've put there, and just say, "Hey guys, we all need to go to Tumblr."
You're not the first one to say that, madman, and to the point where people have even threatened Kotaku and places like that.
Like, if we're shut down, we will go to Tumblr. Like, guys, we just need to all go to Tumblr right now.
Yeah, I think it's...
Oh, I think we just lost him. Ah, that sucks. Anyways, so... Nobody knows what's happening with 4chan. I just... thought we'd have some fun talking about it. And yeah, I find it a little nuts that it's been condemned as the alt-right's message board now. It's like, pretty sure that author just didn't know.
There are communists on there, anarcho-capitalist, everything is in 4chan. You can't give it a political ideology. It's like anonymous.
Hey, on 4chan has an LBGT board.
Yeah. You might be with Anonymous on one thing and just think they completely suck on everything else.
Yeah, but the Anonymous is mostly the FBI these days, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. I was just thinking, 4chan's something you can't really label as any political group, because all of them are there and doing something.
Like I said, I'm pretty certain this author is not somebody who spends any amount of time there. So
I just love watching regular media try and tackle what it is.
The hacker known as 4chan.
Yeah, but unless you live there for like 6 hours a day, you never really truly know what's going on.
I will happily remain ignorant of 4chan.
4chan is kind of this what is it? The ghost-like ephemeral? Thanks, I couldn't say it. For once, Marps couldn't pronounce a word. And, it's just, it's there, but it's not there. Because it just fades off the top of the page for every so often, right?
I mean, if it goes away, I've lost fucking 6-7 hours a day of what I do.
So, anyways, all right, let's button. Here's the button. Let's do this. Yo! Hadouken! All right, first thing I have up in Digital Dojo is a fun post on the Bitcoin subreddit, which is a quick tutorial on setting up a Raspberry Pi with Pydora and Electrum as an offline cold storage wallet. If you don't know what that is, it's the concept of a Bitcoin wallet that the key file has never been on an internet-connected machine, or at least an internet-connected version of that operating system. And that if you get hacked, there's no way for somebody to get that key from you so that they can't steal your Bitcoins. It's a pretty good write-up. I think it's leaving a little bit of steps out, but nothing you couldn't figure out with a little bit of Google and experimentation. Familiarity with how Bitcoin works might be handy. But, if you're looking for a way to do it that doesn't involve spending a ton of money, you can get like a Raspberry Zero for $5 and set up one of these guys as a Bitcoin wallet. That way you have just a little bit of extra control over it. And even if you do hook it up online every once in a while so you can get at it, you can treat it as a kind of like a key that you would unplug and put away when you're not using it. That way it's less likely to get hacked kind of thing.
Hmm.
So, thought it was cool. Thought it was worth exploring. It looks like he sets it up on top of Pydora. He's got some decent steps on getting Electrum and the online wallet set up. But, and he's got some information on even using it, whether it's online or offline, ways of getting the transaction moved to the Bitcoin or to the Bitcoin wallet on the Raspberry Pi without it being online, so that you can verify the key without actually having to expose it to the internet. Interesting concept. So, anyways, continuing the Bitcoin meme, Pepe holding Bitcoins, I guess, is going to be the meme now. Next thing in
Pepe's too retarded for Bitcoins.
Oh, okay.
You give him the chocolate Bitcoin ones and he wonders why he can eat money. It's good.
When did Bitcoin become racist?
The moment I brought it up on Pure Decking. Because remember, we're too conservative for cyberpunk radio. Next up, I have cred sticks. These are cool. So anybody who's ever read Cyberpunk Fiction knows about cred sticks, right? You just have chips instead of money. Well, that's basically what these open dimes are. They're basically a flash drive with a little crypto chip on them that, when you hook it up to a computer, generates a offline Bitcoin wallet, sort of like what I was talking about with the Raspberry Pi, but the key never leaves the open dime and cannot be read unless you physically break off the tab in the middle of the circuit board. So the concept is that instead of using it as a Bitcoin wallet, like you would use the Raspberry Pi for, where you're doing regular Bitcoin transactions, instead, the concept is you would put a round number on it, say $10 worth of Bitcoin. And then you take the open dime, and you want to pay somebody $10 for washing your car or, you know, helping you bury a body. I don't know. Madman, what's a common task you would pay somebody in cash for that you don't want a record of?
Drugs. Cash? Weed.
Weed, okay. So you want to pay somebody $10 for the weed. So you take the open dime, you have $10 worth of Bitcoin on it, and you hand the OpenDime stick to the person, to your weed dealer. And then they can use the OpenDime to verify that they have $10 worth of Bitcoin on there. And you can trade it like cash. Because you're physically handing the little stick to somebody.
Yeah.
And until you break the little tab off of it and actually release the key so you can spend the money that's on it, you have X amount of whatever the value of the Bitcoin on the stick is. And you can plug it into a computer and verify the value of the OpenDime. The only problem is I don't know how you would explain Bitcoin to a weed dealer.
You only buy weed from weed dealers that already know. Huh, some okay. Stoners know these things.
Cool.
Or very slowly.
Or very slowly. It's like, you can get Twinkies and more weed with this.
So, but yeah, it's basically, it's worth a set amount. And I actually ordered some of these because I thought it would be cool to, because it's basically a bare circuit board with the little tab you break off on it. And I was thinking it would be cool to put, I don't know, 0.001 Bitcoin on it or whatever. Or whatever a Satoshi is, like 10 Satoshi or something like that. I forget the exact denomination of a Satoshi of Bitcoin. But 3D print an actual Bitcoin to stick the USB bit into. So you have physical Bitcoin that you just hand to somebody and you can plug into a computer and verify it's actually worth what your, you know, the little 3D printed text says it's worth. I thought it was a fun concept.
Yeah. Be interesting to see how long it takes to take off, or if it ever does get outside the
It's going to have the same issue that Bitcoin currently has. It's not a currency. It's a commodity.
Well, they're actually selling the OpenDime sticks. They actually call it the first Bitcoin Barabond stick. So they're treating it like Barabonds, because if you hold the stick, you have the keys to the wallet that stick is tied to, because the only way to get it off is to physically break the stick to get so you could verify whether the stick's been broken or not, you know? And apparently that does some kind of a physical change. It's like an electric fuse. Once it's blown, it's blown. And when you can even just plug it into a USB battery, and it's got a series of lights on it, or it's got a red and a blue light that'll flash on it, so you can somehow tell from the patterns whether it's been opened or not.
Yeah, that's one. You can see that it's actually physically busted before you know.
Yeah.
Accept it.
So here's the real problem I have with them. If they're going to be, you know, a way of trading bitcoins as cash, so there's no record in the blockchain that you've changed, that the Bitcoin has changed hands, because you're literally passing the wallet around. The real problem with them is that if you go to the store here to buy them, oh, they sold out. Oh, good thing I already got mine. They're $10 a piece. So if you're trying to use these as cash, that's a $10 investment just to get the little stick and set it up. You know what I mean?
But for a $100 transaction on something, it's kind of
sure.
Not so much worth it. Anything less than that, it'd be a little bit more, do I really want to do this?
Yeah, because then it's like, I don't want to give the thing away just to make a Bitcoin transaction because, you know, you paid $10 for it. So. But, Psychros is correcting me in the chat room. Apparently, a Satoshi is 0.0000001 BTC.
That's a lot of zeros.
Say what?
That's a lot of zeros.
That's worth like a dollar, I think. But, I don't know, so making 100 Satoshi coin is not unreasonable, but, okay, so I don't know. I'm just guessing at numbers. I don't know what that's worth. I'd have to look it up. And not that I couldn't do it. I'm just sitting in front of a computer. I suppose I could go look, but
try to maintain just as much integrity as any other media organization. We start verifying facts here, guys. I don't know if we can survive.
Well, I'm not talking about what's true.
All right. And to close things out, last thing I have for Digital Dojo, on the Play DOS Games Online site, Beneath a Steel Sky was posted. And it's probably been up for a while, but I just noticed it the other day, so I thought this would be fun for Digital Dojo. It's a classic cyberpunk DOS game. Worth playing. I played it on a... What was that thing called? It was a little handheld. It wasn't a Game Boy. Oh, shoot. Predates the Raspberry by quite a bit.
Atari Lynx?
No. No, this thing actually ran a full Linux stack.
The Neo Geo handheld thing?
Shit. I have to look this thing up now.
I'm just trying to think in the realm of era that you would have played it on a handheld device.
Uh-huh. No, it wasn't a Neo Geo. It was, old.
Yeah, there's custom ones? Linux type machines. Yeah,
was it Palm Pilot?
It was replaced by the Open Pandora.
There is a couple of places that make custom ones that run ROMs. And they generally in the UK, now they do, though.
Back in the day.
No, this was back in the day, too. If you look at some of the old game magazines, you could get ones. They look like a an Atari Lynx at the time.
GP2X.
That again?
Played it on a GP2X.
GP2X.
I had to look the damn thing up. I've still got it somewhere.
Do you still have that thing that lets you watch TV shows on the old Game Boy?
Yeah, this is one of those custom jobs, man. Like small runs.
Oh, yeah, there weren't many of these things made.
Yeah. No, I remember these. They were way out of my price range, man.
So.
They're really cool. They're cutting edge. How was the battery life on it?
Oh, it sucked. I gave up and started using a power brick. I was playing, what's the Cave Story. I was going to say, what's the Cave Adventure game? It's Cave Story. I played the shit out of some Cave Story on that thing, too, and it, well, basically, on a pair of AA batteries, you could not finish a movie. At least not on mine. And I had it die too many times to be useful as far as the game goes, and I just gave up and started using a power brick. So, it was a neat handheld. There just wasn't enough software for it. And, the F200. That's what I had. The GP2X F200. I'm sure I've got it somewhere. Box somewhere. It might even still work. But I don't know. I'm getting ready to actually build. Adafruit put out a neat design for another Raspberry Pi Game Boy, which was shaped like the Advance, not like the old school one, like the first one I built. So I'm probably going to build that here soon.
That's a picture of all the era of that tech. That's all the handhelds. That level of tech.
Let's see. You got the Game.com handheld. I almost bought one of those too at one point. Game Boy DS, a Wiz? I don't recognize the Wiz. Of course, an iPhone,
neither do
PSP.
I.
That's the Nokia thing there.
Yeah.
I'm surprised the PSP didn't do better.
Never supported it. They never supported it.
It had like three games that was really, really good at.
I think a new game just came out for it this year. Like a game a year sort of comes out for it.
What's the current thing? A PSP Vita?
Yeah. I don't know if they actually released a handheld for the PS4.
PS Vita. Really do a whole lot. Console. Anytime is game time. Huh. It's a neat looking little handheld. I don't know that it's worth. I don't even know what these things cost.
I don't know what it
is. Or something.
Yeah, it's not worth it plus battery.
Here we go. Sony Computer Entertainment PlayStation Vita Wi-Fi certified refurb, $130. Not terrible.
If you're gonna go with a handheld, and I know it's not as powerful, but Nintendo DS, especially with battery life, man. And there's just some fun retro games.
I've got a DS XL floating around here somewhere, and a ROM card for it, if I remember right. I haven't used it in forever, though. But I think I'm gonna stick to building portable Raspis, because at least then I can put whatever the hell I want on it for the most part.
And there are a ton of Super Nintendo and other games you can emulate on those things.
Oh yeah, there's whole distros dedicated to. I've actually got a Raspi 3 at my desk at work, just so we can take it in the meeting rooms and load up Emulation Station.
DVI to the big projector.
Oh, yeah. Oh. Unfortunately, they use a screen scaler in there, and it fucks with it. So we get it to work. You just, you know, every time you change from a game to a menu, it flips out. But I will say this. My boss is damn good at Street Fighter 2. Kick my ass. So.
Well, that's the only thing you got to worry about.
Are we, like, which Street Fighter? Latest or the older version?
Turbo. Street Fighter Turbo, 2 Turbo.
Yes. Turbo 12.
On we were playing the SNES version. He absolutely wrecked me on that.
Turbo's a whole different beast. Especially anything after 6.
Anyways, that's all I've got. I didn't expect we'd go down that rabbit hole just from trying to remember what the hell that thing was. But, you know, it was a good handheld for what it was. It just, It was not powerful enough to do much beyond Super Nintendo emulation, and it struggled to do Super. So, NES, Game Boy stuff, it was fantastic. Apparently, there was a PlayStation 1 emulator for it, and you might be able to get it to work, because I remember seeing something about people getting Diablo to run on it.
That would be cool.
So, but I mean, it was like the PlayStation 1 version emulated, and it was a mess. So, anyways, that's all I got. Listen to the stream. We're always working on it. Peer decking every Thursday. The Galaxy 15 radio site. The subreddit. You know, I forgot to check the subreddit to see if there were any questions. I didn't see any when I looked the other day. Let's see. Hey, you. Yeah, there was something. I missed this. You guys okay with the fade even without RU? Oh, okay. Not questions, it's just lore. Trying to get feedback. So, anyways, that's all I have for tonight. Anybody else have anything before I close out the show for a third time?
The internet has been given to the UN.
Yeah, we'll see how long that lasts.
I can't.
And how fucking retarded does everyone have to be with all these random clown sightings? It's advertising for the new remake of It.
Are they seriously remaking It?
Yeah, yes. They remade it. And this is the advertising for it. And good luck to the poor guy that was shot in the stomach by the cops dressed as a clown.
Oh, that sucks.
There's rewards in my area.
Yeah, it's advertising, man. You watch. And everybody should be looking forward to the new telemovie for Han Solo as a black woman. And
you're an inspiration for bird control.
No, I don't know what you're talking about.
I shit you not. It's either a movie or a TV show coming up where they are taking Han Solo's side story with Chewbacca, but Han Solo is going to be played by a black woman.
The Enrichment Center once again reminds you that Android Hell is a real place where you will be sent at the first sign of defiance.
Not sure Android Hell is any different from the regular hell that we're living.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to that one next year. Oh, yeah, and new MacGyver TV show. Haven't watched it yet.
Are you? I'm so tempted to play the virtual Are You sound.
Han Solo is a dude. He's a white dude.
There'll be a black chick soon.
Good night, everybody.